I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
From Backpage, welcome to Between the Lines, the podcast that tells the stories behind great sports writing. My name is Martin Gregg, and this is my conversation with Daniel Gray, the author of multiple excellent books on football, including Saturday 3pm and Black Boots and Football Pinks. In this episode, we discuss a new book called Snapshot, Scenes and Stories from the Heartlands of Scottish Football. The book is a collaboration with photographer Alan McCready and is a series of photo essays covering lots of interesting aspects of football culture in Scotland, from the Highland League to junior football, ghost stadiums to thriving social clubs. As always with Daniel's work, it is his powers of observation, his ability to capture moments of beauty and humanity, which elevates it. Enjoy. So Daniel, let's start by talking a bit about the concept of the book, which is a collaboration with photographer Alan McCready. I know you've worked with Alan before on other projects. Is this project, is this one that you've both had in mind for a while?
I think to bring the photo essays together was the idea. So a lot of the images already appeared in Nutmeg, and all along we said this would make a great book if we added to it with more text, more photos, a few extra chapters. I think from the very start, it's 4 years since we did the first one on the first day of that season. Once we saw it in print in Nutmeg magazine, both of us thought, this one day, if we keep going, there's a nice book in this. If you get it right design-wise, which undoubtedly Ali, who designed it, who designs Nutmeg, has got it right design-wise. And if it can smell as good as Nutmeg, which it does, it smells as good as a Panini album, as Danny Garavelli rightly identified, then yeah, I think we always thought there was something in it. Scottish football, to us, is so picturesque. And I don't just mean that when you're in a ground with beautiful surroundings, mountains behind it and all of the rest. But it's so picturesque in the uniqueness of it, in the rough edges of it, in how old most of the grounds are, in how the lack of money in the Scottish game has meant that you've kept a lot of old grounds with all the character, and that word comes up so much. So it's very photogenic, and there are stories absolutely everywhere to write about. You're never short of material in the Scottish game.
So you're talking about 14 chapters covering a variety of different geographical locations in Scotland, from the Borders to the Highlands, but also different experiences within that. So you're talking about social clubs, the magic of floodlit football, park football. So you're trying to reflect lots of different aspects of the Scottish football landscape.
Yeah, from the very top. So from, you know, one of the last photos we got to take before lockdown was for the chapter on floodlights, and it was at Ibrox, the European game. They just squeezed in right through to the Lowland League and the Highland League in June. And yeah, and a whole chapter on Red Blaze pitches, for instance. So it's an attempt to capture the many different fabrics to the game there are here. It's such a rich terrain, you know. I know people often come out with that stat about Scotland having one of the highest attendance ratios in Europe, but it's more than that, really. It's the fact that it's very hard to get into a taxi in Scotland without the taxi driver starting a conversation about football, and you're relieved sometimes that you know your stuff, so because you think, what else would you talk about? But that's just an example of the book's an attempt to tap into the way football is so intrinsic in Scottish life. That, of course, means 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock, means offsides, great goals, all the rest. It means transfer rooms. But more than that, it means what happens outside 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock on a Saturday. So there's a chapter on social clubs, for instance, because they're so important to the towns they're in. They're often in ex-mining towns, these clubs, and places like that. And the football clubs are real hubs, and we wanted to capture that and get it across. You know, the cover has that famous now ground in Eriskay on the front cover, and football means just as much there as it does at Ibrox, and we wanted to really capture that.
We're going to talk a little bit about one of your trips, which was to the Highlands of Scotland. And it struck me reading the book that there's so many aspects of the football experience that are completely unrelated to the game itself. And one of them, obviously, is the physical journey to the ground or stadium, which is obviously very relevant to the Highlands. It actually reminded me about a trip I took for the Herald once in 2007. I went to cover St Cuthbert Wanderers against Pollock United, which was the first round of the Scottish Cup. And it was actually quite a historic day because it was the first time junior clubs had been allowed to play in the Scottish Cup. So I went down to the southwest of Scotland, down to Kirkcudbury, where St Cuthbert Wanderers are based. And Kirkcudbury is a beautiful little town, and they play in St Mary's Park, which is in the banks of the estuary at the Solway Firth. And it was just amazing. It was an amazing journey. One of my most memorable working days of my 5 years working at the Herald. But it struck me that that physical journey of you and Alan and this whistle stop tour of the Highlands, you know, that must have been as big a part of the experience as anything else.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a great dynamic to it in that I can't drive, so Alan always has to pick me up. And it just starts from there, and it gives you that boyish feeling of a day out, because we don't get to have many days out once we become adults. In fact, the day out in general is a disappearing thing, you know, the coach journey, the tipping the driver and all of that stuff. So to have that day out feeling and the two of you off on the roads, getting up north, getting Radio 5 on or Radio Scotland and listening to the pre-match previews and things like that, making you stop offs, all absolutely part of it. And, you know, it's sort of, it's what The Trip, the BBC series, was so popular for, capturing that dynamic between, it'd be the same with two women, it'd be the same with the woman in the man shop, but in this case, two blokes, two good mates going off to do their thing. Really enjoyable time. Some of the other trips, we took our kids with us. Alan's son and my daughter are best mates anyway, so that brought another joyous thing to it, and they do creep into some of the photos in the book, as you might expect.
And the Highland landscape itself is an incredible canvas for a writer and a photographer, but you know, when you pitch up to these places, very often the match itself is really not of any importance to the narrative and the images. I mean, you're looking for the quirks and the colour. Like, talk us through what you're looking for as you approach a stadium.
The exterior of the stadium is really important. So I'll be looking, from a writing point of view, at signs. I love to note things like, for instance, we started at Strathspey Thistle in that chapter, which is in Granton. And I remember their signs were in laminated pocket file folders, just fantastic, which gives you a sort of insight, and they were looking for a volunteer person to help them with IT. So those things on the outside of the ground that really tell you a bit about the character of the club. In terms of photography, the corrugated fences are always a beautiful thing to capture, always lovingly painted, and you just know immediately by a volunteer or someone who's painted the ground to get an advertising hoarding for free inside. And then walking in, the noise of the turnstile, it'll always be a romantic thing to me. And most of these clubs have proper turnstiles. Nairn County up there have the Salford-built turnstiles that were the mainstay of the great British turnstile back in the day. Sometimes they've got them from bigger grounds that have been knocked down. So those noises and those smells that immediately hit you are important. Observing the committee men is important, because these are the absolute lifeblood of the Scottish game, the volunteers and the committee men. The various huts you get around, with very homespun huts selling, whether it's the pies, the programmes, the lottery tickets. All of these things that every ground has but are different in each ground are fantastic for photography and writing. And then as the ground fills up, you just look at what type of person is coming here, people on their own, because football is a real help for those that live on their own. And that's who I've worried about most during the absence of football, people that once a week get to go out and be around other people. So you spot them and they're good for photographs and they've got stories. And really, it's similar things every time, but with a unique bent. And in the Highlands, it's a surprise to find such a rich football culture for someone like me, an Englishman, because all your stereotype of the Highlands is the mountains, rural land, distilleries at the very most. And it's so rich. You see a stand like the main stand at Forres Mechanics, which is opposite a distillery as it happens. And that could be anywhere in the central belt of Scotland, which we always think of as the real heartland of football. Nairn County, characterful little ground. All of these become something of a surprise when you stereotype the Highlands a bit. It's a very, very rich football culture, and zipping around those grounds that day just made us want to stay for a lot longer, really.
Yeah, it's interesting when you do a light up on these environments, like nothing is not interesting almost, you know, like from the people, the accents, the landscape, the serving hatches, you know, the old turnstiles, the advertising hoardings, you know, it's so rich an environment. But I'm interested, like when you visit these venues, like would you say you do so as a fan or as a journalist? Because there is some journalism, there is some documenting in this book. You do speak to people, you do chat to club officials. Do they know you're coming at any point, or do you just introduce yourself when you get there? Little interviews, bits and pieces. How do you piece it together?
Usually just introduce ourselves when we get there. I'll take a copy of Nutmeg magazine as a sort of credential, but these places are so friendly. We usually try and pay our way in as well, just to show that we're not on a freebie and all of that. They don't always accept it, but every club, Lowland to Highland, friendly every time, and just talks to you. Very, very pleased to show off their club, their little part of football. Very proud and to tell you all of that stuff. In terms of my writing, I definitely write as a fan first. You know, I've never had any journalism training, and I didn't really start to do much in newsprint till I hit my 30s. It was more books before that. So I've done it the other way around in some ways. And last season I did a few match report style things for Scotland on Sunday, which I enjoyed tremendously. So I think I'm having a reverse career, but I certainly approach it as someone more than even a fan, someone that's just in love with the game and looking to extol its virtues, and they're very easy to extol and to find in that kind of place. But always, you're right, there are individual stories you pick out. So I think again of Nairn, and what struck me at Nairn once I'd had my usual walk around to every stand was I heard a voice of a man commentating really in detail behind the goal, and thought, why is he commentating? Because that could be annoying in some circumstances. And I turned around and he was commentating to his son, who was blind. His son was leaned into him with his head on his shoulder. And it was just one of the, if I say sweetest, it sounds patronising, but most heart-filling moments of the whole thing. That the dad was getting across what was happening on the pitch to his son. They were still going together. It didn't matter that he was blind. You know, football has no barriers in some ways like that. So you end up feeling a bit nosy, but you can't help but write about something like that because it fills your heart. It really does, that you share the same love with people from all walks of life. These are all cliches I'm speaking in, but moments like that, you know you've got something to write about.
Yeah, I think putting yourself in amongst the fans and the community and just listening as much as anything is really important. I remember being down at the St Cuthbert Wanderers game, and Pollock beat them quite comprehensively that day. I think it was 6-2. And as the game was going on, St Cuthbert Wanderers had this big centre half, and he kept like booting the ball like as far as possible out of play. But the Solway Firth was right beside the ground, so the ball would like end up in the water. So this happened about two or three times, and I remember there was a group of fans beside me, and they were chatting. I said, "What's going on? Why does he keep doing that?" And apparently, his thinking was that like they only had a set amount of balls, and if he kicked every ball into the Solway Firth, they'd have to abandon the match. It'd have to be like replayed. But it's amazing how you can just get more from just being around the regulars and tuning into to what their concerns are than you can from yeah, actually trying to undertake any, you know, serious high-minded reporting.
Yeah, the other thing in you hope a book lasts for a long time, and if you start to do too much detail on the match itself and talk about players' names and things, it becomes quickly irrelevant. Whereas I dare say when the Highland League comes back at the end of November with fans in, so it seems, that there'll be the same people saying the same things with the same gripes. You know, they'll have spent the last 9 months going, I miss football. 1 minute past three at Rothes FC, there'll be someone shouting, you know, a load of shite at the centre forward. And there's something in that as well. So there's difference every time. There's colour, there's stories, but it's the constancy of it that in a changing world that people really identify with, I think.
Can you talk a little bit about how you and Alan work together? Because that's something that intrigued me. Sometimes the images are not directly connected to the words. Sometimes they are. I mean, there's a great image of, I think it's an Arthur Lee groundsman, and he's rolling the pitch and he's trying to get the water off the pitch to make the game playable. And he's got a brilliant expression on his face, actually. It's not, it's kind of hard to read, actually. He's not happy, but it's almost like some kind of stoicism, you know, we're going to get this game on. But it's reflected in your copy because you talk, I think you speak to him and yeah. You've got some quotes from him in the book.
Yeah, because... So, he's of that old school of, they wouldn't have called it off in my day, that sort of health and safety gone mad attitude. But yeah, you're right. Alan always loved photo essays in the National Geographic where the writer didn't necessarily refer to the photographs at all, but they were vaguely connected. So he was always fine with that and likes that approach. But yeah, very often I don't see the photos until after I've written the text. And sometimes there's things we've both noticed, but we go off on our own. We arrive together and then Alan just disappears off, and every sort of 15 minutes I spot him at the other end of the pitch, and then we text each other going, right, we better move on to somewhere else now, kind of thing. And we have a quick chat together with a couple of people. Sometimes I'll say, oh, you know, there's a couple of shots in the book where I remember saying, go and get a shot of that. One of them is the Nen. There's four fans from outside the ground. And there's lots of things that I would write about that would also make good photos. There's a lot of overlap in what me and Alan love about these places. So it's just a different way of storytelling, whether it's through pictures or words. We really are into the same things like that. Alan and I met because we live on the same street. He's moved a few streets away now, but we met 7 or 8 years ago, I think, putting the wheelie bins out. And our families became friends. But it was clear from the start we loved the same sort of photography and the same things about football. And he's almost proud that there's not much football action in the whole book.
In my experience, good photographers tend to have a very finely tuned antennae. And if they see, for example, you know, you're chatting to the groundsman about something, suddenly they'll appear by your side and they're snapping away. So it's a great skill of that job, isn't it? That they know where a moment might occur.
And then when they get lucky, to be with a photographer that gets lucky is a wonderful thing. One example of that in the Highland chapter, at Strathspey Thistle, there were, I've forgotten what type of bird it was, circling above us, and they couldn't move them on from their nest because they were a protected species. And we were watching them, and I was writing about the cleep-cleep noise they were making. And then one swooped down and attacked a substitute, and Alan just got it at the right time. And he was, for 3 hours, he just kept shaking his head about in joy that we got that moment. So it's quite nice as a writer to see what makes people with other, I don't want to use the word art forms, but hobbies, no, smile in that way, in the way I would when I get the right metaphor or similarly. That's the thing you want to get across, to fill in the gaps when you're writing a book with a photographer. What can't a photographer get across? He can't get across smell and he can't get across sound. So I'm very conscious in the writing that I tell people what it sounded like and what it smelled like, because everything else pretty much he can do.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You use a great phrase at one point, the atmosphere of community, and I think you capture that really well, the atmosphere of community. But I think you write about it in quite a powerful way, because I think what you do is you celebrate it rather than you sentimentalise it. And you know, that's a very fine line to walk. I mean, there's a way to do this wrong, but I think by tuning into it in the way you do and writing from it, in a kind of impassioned, honest way, I think you walk that line better than anyone. Do you think about that? Because, you know, there is a way of overly romanticising or sentimentalising people's lives in these places.
I think that's kind of, you say so. I think it's just because it's so similar to my own upbringing in my own life. So lots of the places we go to, I was born on Teesside but moved to North Yorkshire when I was little, and lots of the places, like the social clubs we go to, just look the same as ones in the northeast of England and in North Yorkshire and things, and in Yorkshire in general. So it's not like I'm an outsider going in. These people remind me of my own relatives. You know, the football people are, you already have that in common, but there's a social class thing as well. I feel very at home in the mining towns of West Lothian, really. You never face any hostility of any sort. I just feel, sometimes you feel like you're among your own in some ways, which helps. But why you shouldn't sentimentalise is, well, one, life can be very tough, but two, these are still living communities. They're not on the cusp of changing much. I don't see the social clubs, you know, lots do close down, but they're still quite strong. They're still a big way of life. It's just that we in the cities, particularly with our different trappings and social media, have forgotten that those lives are still being led. So because they're not, I don't feel it's on, that way of life is on the cusp of disappearing, then I don't feel too so. It's real, it's there, it exists, and those places have much better crisps than all the posh bars in Edinburgh.
They certainly do. There's a great chapter on Red Blaze Pitches, and I actually emailed you a bit about this beforehand. I mean, there'll be lots of people listening to this podcast that don't know what Red Blaze is. Red Blaze is red ash or gravel. And I think in the book you say it's the, is it the spoil of the shale oil mining industry, something like that?
Yeah, I never knew that, because anyone who's travelled from Edinburgh to Glasgow on the on motorway or train will have seen the big shale bings, which are the same sort of crimson colour as the pitches, and that's where they were taken from. I didn't realise till we did that chapter, but only an Englishman who's never played on those pitches could romanticise them.
Well, I'll come to that actually, but I mean, for people who don't know, Glasgow Corporation had this insane idea that they would take these mounds of red ash and make them into municipal pitches all over the west of Scotland. I don't know who ever had that great idea.
Well, I heard all sorts of unprintable stuff from people who were around at the time to do with contractors, council corruption, pollution buried within and all of this stuff, but I thought, best not get us sued.
Yeah. I grew up playing on those parks. I grew up in the west of Scotland, and I hated them. You know, the ball bounced all over the place. You could play a good ball would become a bad ball because it would just bounce, and go out of play. So you really had to play a different type of football. And when I started playing out with the West of Scotland, it was always grass parks. Everywhere else had grass parks apart from the bloody West of Scotland, right? And it was like playing a different sport. Yeah. So I don't really have a great affection for those parts. And in some ways, I think they are responsible for hindering our technical development in Scotland. But it was really interesting kind of seeing it through your eyes. And, you know, you offer the kind of different perspective. And when I'm reflecting back in that, I can see some of the merits of the experiences that I had. Mm. You know, playing in these difficult surfaces in difficult weather. It is quite character forming. But, you know, you mentioned there's a great line which I wrote down here. And you said, I find these pitches mesmerising, beautiful, evil, even. This is almost entirely because I never had to play in one. You know, and that was it. Because that just made it for me, because you were acknowledging for people like me that, you know, this is not a sentimental thing for a lot of people. You know, this represents pain and suffering, you know.
I did take a ball that day, because we make little films of these photo essays, and I thought it'd be good to see a ball bouncing on it. So I was smashing a ball in the net and trying to do kick-ups was absolutely impossible for some reason. I just couldn't get where my feet were supposed to be, and the balance of it throws your feet around. And yeah, so what was interesting with that is the night before I put on Twitter, who's got a Red Blaze pitch near them still? And it just went, it was one of the most popular tweets I've ever made. It just got hundreds of replies. Each reply was full of, oh, that bloody thing, I've still got some red ash in my knee. And then, oh, one scored from 45 yards on one of them. There was this strange, dark fondness for them. Really interesting. It's deep in the West of Scotland psyche, though, definitely.
Yeah, but I think that line, you know, going back to the tone of that you're trying to hit, I thought that was a really, really important line to have, that, you know, you're seeing this from an outsider's point of view, but people who see it from the inside have got quite a different experience of it, you know? And it's just trying to kind of walk that line between saying, you know, this is something that is part of somebody's life experience, but you know, it's not all a bed of roses when you look back on it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely right. Anything that you didn't have where you grew up is really, really interesting. So the first time I started walking around Edinburgh or Glasgow, the stone is so different. You know, we don't have even the word tenement in York where I grew up. So it really helps being an outsider is what I'm trying to get at here. And that undoubtedly has helped grow my affection for Scottish football, because I don't have an innate dislike of any team either. Whereas in England, I could reel off teams that have annoyed me over the years. But here, they're all even to me, which is a really useful thing, especially being editor of Nutmeg, because I have no prejudices on that front. That's the perk of the outsider.
Yeah, I think your perspective as an outsider is really, really important in this book. And I think it gives these experiences a kind of universality, and you were saying, you know, this is like, with lots of people listening to this that aren't living in Scotland and don't have any affinity with Scottish football, but that's not the point. You know, you could pick up this book and just be a fan of football or life.
Yeah, it's the values. Before the latest lockdown, I've been to quite a few Northern Premier League games in the northwest and northeast of England, and you could almost have, though they're so similar, is what I'm trying to say. You could, the grounds, the people that go, the attitudes. It's a universal game, particularly, that's what goes without saying, but the character of it is very similar across England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. So listeners and readers will tune into this book with those same values, but there's an added level of romance when you're in England to a lot of we know about the team names in Scotland, we're always fascinated by them, St Mirren, St Johnstone, Queen of the South, Heart of Midlothian. When you're a kid in England growing up, impossibly romantic. A lot of people share that in England, and so, you know, the book sold quite well across the UK, and it just shows that these shared values in football are there, and people recognise these things. They definitely have a unique Scottish tint to them. The team colours are different. You know, you get very few teams that play in red in Scotland for some reason. What you do get are incredible kit combinations. There's not an equivalent to the Partick Thistle shirt in England. So there's those unique things that make it different enough to just be exotic, but there's those universal values that people really tune into and subscribe to.
Thank you for listening to Between the Lines. You can buy Snapshot via the link in the show notes, where there is also a link to Nutmeg, the Scottish football periodical mentioned in the show. There you will also find a link to our latest book, At the End of the Storm, Stories from Liverpool's Historic Title Triumph, which is published in partnership with The Athletic. This is our last show of 2020, so if you can be bothered giving us a small Christmas present by leaving a rating or review, wherever you listen to this, then we would be most grateful.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.